Let me tell you about the new sports app we've launched as a part of our USA Today family. USA Today Sports Plus is the new sports app that puts the fans first. Get the latest scores, stats, and standings and enjoy interactive experiences with our award-winning sports writers. Download the USA Today Sports Plus app from the Apple or Google Play stores today. USA Today Sports Plus. Fan harder.
Hello and welcome to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. This is Joel A. Erickson. I am here, as always, with Nate Atkins. And Nate, considering that the Colts are headed to Jacksonville this week, I think the important question is, do you believe in curses?
Well, you're asking someone from Cleveland if he believes in curses. So I'm going to have to say yes, although, you know, they say in 2016 is when LeBron killed the Cleveland curse, but it's almost like the Cleveland curse can only be killed by LeBron, because it's like all the teams went right back to what they were before he was there. So, yeah, I think, you know, it's a weird thing where it's almost like it becomes psychological. So whether curses exist or not, the fact that you have to ask that question, like, kind of creates a curse, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, all the Colts players are talking about the fact that they can't win in Jacksonville. And it's like it becomes front of mind at a certain point. I always think about this, like, when you especially see this at the college level, like, I feel like this is just kind of recent, but every time that Georgia plays Alabama, they have to beat Alabama and they have to beat what's in their mind about Alabama because they're owned by them. And the same thing, like, for many years, that was Michigan against Ohio State. And then it was reversed to that in the 90s. It's like some of these things just get beaten so into your brain that you say, like, oh, it's not a curse, it's not real. And then it's like you show up and you can't get it out of your mind. And so, yeah, I think it exists on some level, no doubt.
I think the quote here for me is Roy Kent from Ted Lasso, season one, when they're all in a bad mood before they have to go to Everton, and Ted says, what's going on in here? And Roy finally says, we're in a bleep bleeping mood because we always lose at Everton and it bleeps bleeping bleep.
Yeah. That's the way to put it. I haven't watched Ted Lasso much yet, so
that's terrible. It's terrible, Nate. Hey, Nate can't see it, but literally on my desk right now, there's a mug that has the Believe sign on it. There's a coffee mug that has the Believe sign.
I've been stuck between two different football beats in a single fall and moving states, so I will be catching up on TV and Ted Lasso. I promise.
Ted Lasso's been around for 2 years. That is not an excuse. Not an excuse. No points.
Yeah, but I feel like the momentum picked up recently.
No points are awarded.
Whatever. I always watch shows so late that, like, 2 years to me is like 2 days. Like, I got to Lost like 7 years after it came out. Just how it goes.
It's no lie. It's my favorite show of all time. Favorite show of all time. It has already come up on this podcast many times. I couldn't resist the urge to throw Roy Kent in there. It's just a weird thing with the in Jacksonville thing, haven't won there since 2014, just because the Colts had the better team, I think, in five of those 6 years. You know, there's some weird circumstances in there. There's some backup quarterbacks, and I think there's actually a London game in there, so it's not actually a Jacksonville one.
See, that's how powerful the curse is. It just follows them across the world.
Yeah. The weirdest one, you know, the 2019 one, the Colts had just spiraled. That Colts team spiraled at the end, behind Jacoby Brissett, just kind of losing it towards the end of the season completely. And that one, like, I can understand that one. Last year was the season opener. Given where they ended up, it looks crazy, but it was a season opener. Weird things happen in season openers. The 2018 one is the weirdest one that I've covered. It's because the Colts, it was the only loss the Colts had in a stretch of 11 games. They won the five games before that and the five games after that and scored 0 points. There were three fourth down and ones that they tried to get and didn't pick up. And that's what most people remember about it. But it was a slog no matter what. They only rushed for like 41 yards. I think Andrew Luck averaged 4.8 yards attempt or something like that, 4.6 yards per attempt in the middle of a stretch of like averaging 9 yards per attempt. It's just a weird game. So that's I think I understand the apprehension that some Colts fans have for this game because
honestly, well, they lost to them last year, and literally no other team in the NFL lost to them. Like, yeah. That's the best argument for the curse yet.
And honestly, the when you look at it on paper, there's just no reason. I mean, Vegas made the Colts a 15.5 point favorite for an obvious reason. I mean, the Jaguars have not scored more than the Jaguars have scored more than 20 points just once in the last 10 games, and that was against the Jets, and they scored 21. Whereas the Colts haven't scored less than 20 points since the ankles game against Tennessee. I mean, just on that point right there, it's pretty obvious that it's a Jaguars team that doesn't have James Robinson. They can't score. They can't protect Trevor Lawrence. They don't have all their guys. I know the Colts really respect their defensive front, but for the most part, their defense has been run over this year. There's just no reason on paper to think that this game doesn't. If the Colts lose this game, a curse is a better explanation, I think, than anything that we've seen from these two teams this season.
Yeah, I mean, they just lost 50-10 to the Patriots. I mean, 50-10 in an NFL game like that, that's pretty freaking horrible. And as we know, the Colts beat that Patriots team just a couple of weeks before that. You know, it is interesting how front of mind it is, though, for this team. Because even, like, DeForest Buckner's coming out and talking about, like, this is our big, you know, our big statement is to overcome this. Like, he's played there one time. You know, but it was last year when they lost, and that was the only game the Jaguars won. But it was like, that's kind of what makes DeForest great, too, is that he's not that guy who's like, well, I wasn't here, so it doesn't matter. It's like he's one of their leaders, and so he's wearing it for everybody, and they feel it. And especially, like, maybe that helps them this week to have that narrative to take care of business a little bit better than maybe you would against another team that looks like they've just mailed it in. Is that there is some reminder that, hey, this team may look terrible right now, but they get you every year in this place anymore. So, yeah, it's weird. I haven't been here for any of those games, so I can't really go through them and explain why that is. But I do think there becomes a psychological component to it where if you do start struggling in a game like that after you've heard about it all week long and talked about all week long, you know, you start to unravel a little bit.
Well, Frank Reich has pointed out every time they played Jacksonville this season that the Jaguars tend to play the Colts well. And he's right, because even at home, you know, the game earlier this year was a little bit harder than it seemed like it probably needed to be. Last year, they won to clinch the playoff berth, and they were up 20-0. And then there was a real nerve-wracking second half where the Jaguars came back and scored 2 touchdowns, and they needed Jonathan Taylor to rip one off to kind of like the Patriots game a little bit. Then there was another game in there that was really close. It's just weird how the Jaguars always seem to find a way to play this team close. And the other thing about this particular edition of the Colts is they don't have any losses this year against teams that are really bad, and they don't have a whole lot of bad performances against them. The first Jaguars game is really the only one I can think of. Some of them in retrospect seem worse. Like, the Seahawks are terrible now, but they had Geno Smith starting for a while, and that kind of derailed their season. Before that, you know, when the Colts played him, it was the season opener. It was Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf and all those guys, you know. The last time we had a game like this was the Texans game, and they stomped the Texans down into the ground. One of the other things I think that actually I want to get into here is this might be a very strange atmosphere. Have you seen what the Jaguars fans are planning?
Yep, the clown suits.
I really selfishly am hoping that this is, like, really widespread. For those who don't know, Jaguars fans have been threatening and trying to plan to wear clown masks with mustaches on them to the game to protest them keeping – I'm going to get this name wrong. Is it Trent Baalke?
Yep.
They're protesting them keeping Trent Baalke after firing Urban Meyer – And if you look at some Jaguars, like if you go to like a Jaguars beat writer's Twitter or a Jaguars tweet or something like that, and you look at the replies, there are a lot of avatars that have been changed to clown masks with mustaches on them. So there could be a real weird element to this game. I've already made it a note to tell our photographer on the way into the game on Sunday to be on the lookout for this, because if this is actually unified and, like, you know, even 5,000 people show up wearing clown suits, it'll be a real weird thing. I've never seen anything or heard of anything like that. I'm for the experience, I'm kind of hoping that this is a big deal.
Well, it's amazing to think how they got here, because it was not even a year ago that they are, you know, touting the big hire of Urban Meyer, and it's Shad Khan and Urban Meyer up there talking about how they're eventually going to, you know, get these stands packed with Jaguars fans who are going nuts for the home team and make this one of the hardest places to play for a team with Trevor Lawrence, like all these dreams they had laid out. And yet we're already here before the season's even over, and fans are trying to wear clown suits to show them how much they hate this franchise. And it's interesting because I would imagine that anyone who's on board with that would rather the Jaguars lose and get blown out of this game, because it would add to that. Like, this moment, if the Colts come in here and they just look like what they should, and they just take care of business and they're beating up on this team, if this is like when they played the Texans and that game was just over in a quarter, like, that's going to feed all of that. And that's, if the game becomes so uninteresting by like halftime, then the whole storyline is going to be, look at all these people in clown suits, you know, going crazy. And so that is, that's the way you try to hurt an owner. Is it's like you can spout on Twitter all you want, you can get mad, but it's like when it feels like everyone just sees your product as a joke, it's like sometimes that can get through. It's similar to what, like, Giants fans, I'm curious if they plan anything for, you know, that team saying they're going to bring back Joe Judge when that team can only score 3 points against the Bears. They're pretty testy up there, and that's a much bigger market. But it's interesting because Jaguars fans, you don't meet a ton of them throughout the country, but they get pretty feisty down there in Duval County.
I saw somebody say this. I don't know enough about Jacksonville. I was reading somewhere that there is a group of Jaguars fans now. It might have been Mike Kay. Mike Kay covers the Eagles now. He used to cover the Jaguars, but he was saying that there's the Jaguars have been around long enough now that there are a bunch of people who are probably around my age and your age who grew up with the Jaguars and were there for like the Brunell and McCardell and Jimmy Smith years and have been fans for a long time. And he said that it might not seem like there's a lot, but they can be very focused and very intense. And if that's true, then maybe this clown thing's going to happen.
It's always interesting when that's their only team, you know? So yeah, it's easy to make jokes about Florida pro sports fans are usually not all that passionate, but it's, you know, you look at those other cities, Miami and Tampa Bay outside of Orlando, like they share teams and it's just sort of like, there's plenty of things to do in those areas, but Jacksonville's a little different. It doesn't have as much to do as Miami and it's their only team. And it's like, there are people who, like you said, by this point, they've been around long enough that some of these people did grow up with them. And that's the one team they've grown up with for decades now that is always kind of in these rumors of, are they going to move to London? And, you know, they finally got a taste of almost going to the Super Bowl when they had a lead over the Patriots, which to me is one of the most shocking seasons in NFL history, that Blake Bortles had a lead in New England to go to the Super Bowl. And then, like, the Jaguars have never won in any other year there's over. But they've been through a lot, the people that are passionate for that team. And you know what? It's like, I think they know what's at stake here, too, because, like, I mean, they've been through bad teams before. That's nothing new to the NFL. But they have Trevor Lawrence. Like, they got the number one pick. They were bad for a purpose, got the number one pick. And now it's like, we can't let this go off the rails. It already kind of did with Urban Meyer. And now if they botch the leadership a second time, it's like, you know, we've seen that story play out in the NFL so many times where you just ruin a quarterback before he really has a chance. And so I'm rooting for it. I just think it would be fun and interesting. And I compare it to the Texans game we went to, which is like a franchise in a similar spot of just being terrible, but like there were no fans there at all. I mean, we were so jarred by the fact that like the tailgate had like 2 tents and that was like it. So it's like, I'm bring on the clowns, baby.
I do not have, I think I've been to Jacksonville. I think this will be my 5th time going to the stadium. I think I covered one Saints game there. It's hard to remember. It might have been a preseason game. I don't have any memory of the first 3 times I was there. The only reason I remember last year is because it was the season opener, and at the time it was literally the only stadium the NFL was playing in that had fans. So Colts fans, Colts fans showed up last year. I was really impressed with Colts fans last year because at the time you couldn't get into Lucas Oil. They knew it was going to be limited. And there were people that drove down. I'd have to go back and look at my story to shout these people out by name. But I talked to a couple of people in the parking lot who'd driven all the way down from Carmel starting on Friday night. They just drove down, went and saw the Colts, and drove right back. I was just really impressed by the devotion to going and seeing the team. And so that one sticks out just because it was the only one with fans in the stands. The only way I think a game in Jacksonville is ever going to be memorable for me again is if there's a bunch of clowns sitting in a stand in the stands.
Well, there's 2 ways it's memorable. Either the clowns really deliver or the Colts lose. I mean, people would talk about this forever if their season just ends because they get to the end of it, they lose a home game to the Raiders, and then they lose to this horrible Jaguars team that can't do anything at all in front of the clowns. Can you imagine that? Like, the fans came out to mock their horrible team and you lose to them? Like, that. I'm not saying I'm rooting for that either, but there's some potential for interesting in this game. The matchup's not interesting, but Sunday could be interesting.
From a Colts standpoint, usually on this podcast, we kind of try to break down the matchups, but I don't really think, other than just kind of glossing over the Jaguars, there's just not a lot there to really break down. I think from a Colts standpoint, you know, the dominant storyline this week has been Carson Wentz. And, you know, where he's at and what he can do, what he can't do, obviously needs to be better than he has been over the last couple of games. The passing game in general needs to be better. 6.3 yards per attempt over the last 7 games. That's Frank Reich's big number. He wants it to be 7 at the least, 7.5 is the goal. And he acknowledged that, you know, he's been paying attention to that number. It's been trending down. They've just got to get that. Not for this week necessarily. I think that they could probably beat the Jaguars doing the exact same thing they did to the Texans, where they just ran Jonathan Taylor until they finally capitulated. Assuming they beat the Jags and get into the playoffs, they're going to need more plays in the passing game. They're going to need chunk plays down the field. Because we've seen it. Every team is gearing up to stop Taylor now. And even though he's running for 100 yards, there's been points in every game for a while now where it's kind of been a slog in the running game.
Yeah, it's interesting you said the past 7 games, because that stretch started with that game against the Jaguars. Like, that was the first time that this really was like, hey, this offense and passing game are not doing that much. And then they go to Buffalo the next week, and that's a rain game, and Taylor goes nuts. But really, since then, that's when the passing game has just lost its bite. And I've been looking at a lot with the passing game this week because I'm working on something that's just diving into why it's gone this way over 7 weeks and why the explosion is just completely gone. And I don't know, it's interesting the way that it's dropped off from there, because you look at, like, really, we talked about how weeks 1 through 3 were like abysmal for this team, and there are easy reasons why. You know, Julian Davenport starting at tackle, and Carson Wentz didn't practice with these guys, a new team. But their yards per attempt in those first 3 weeks are only just barely worse than they are since the Jaguars game. I mean, if you add in the sacks, that's where it's maybe a little different. But their actual net yards per dropback since the Jaguars game is 5.7. Those first 3 weeks was 5.4. In those middle weeks, between those 2 stretches, it was 7.2. So it's like they caught fire for a bit, but it's starting to look like that little week 4 through 9 stretch might be the anomaly to the season, because you know, what is this passing game at the end of the day? And the more I look at it, it's just, you know, I'll be getting into it more because I'll be talking to Michael Pittman and his coach tomorrow. But this team almost like Michael Pittman got really hot in that stretch in there. You think about like the, you know, the 49ers game, you had a huge performance. Like that's where the dynamic plays were coming from. They're just not there right now. And some of it is the fact that he's getting more attention. You know, his second year player and his profile has grown. And then it's also, what else do they have to play around that? It's like they got T.Y. Hilton back in that span. And he's actually, in the past seven games, he has the second most yards and the most touchdowns of anybody. But it's 196 yards. And it's just 196 yards on 15 catches. Like, if it was I keep going back to this, but if it was T.Y. Hilton of old, that's your explosion. Like, you can go ahead and double team Michael Pittman. You can stack the box on Jonathan Taylor. We're going deep. But it's like they talked this week about how they need to get back to some of the play action deep shots. But what they need to figure out is with who. I mean, like, who is that guy that's going to fly down the field and win in those situations? Ashton Doolin's done it a couple times, but he's seems kind of raw for a wide receiver. He only has six targets in the past seven games. And then a lot of these other guys just do not fit that mold at all. I mean, we're talking about tight ends. Like, everyone they're throwing to is either a tight end or running back, T.Y. Hilton, Ashton Doolin, Zach Pascal, Michael Pittman. So if teams are going to double Michael Pittman, where do you go? And that's what's kind of hard to figure out right now.
I think one of the other things is just with Wentz the last couple of weeks, you've seen just – there's just too many missed throws on throws that should be easy. And not to say – I think that the most important thing for this offense, they said, like, this is built to be more of a downfield passing offense, get more chunk plays than maybe last year's. But that doesn't mean that they can't hit some of the shorter throws. You know, like – when they get when Wright gets somebody on a crosser and it's open, like he's got to hit it. He's just got to hit it. He's got to not. He can't overshoot it. He doesn't necessarily. I don't think that's necessarily changing his style at all. It's just it's like two or three throws a game would be huge in any of these games. You take them from 148 yards against the Raiders to 220 and they win the game going away. You know, and so some of the accuracy things, he just has to be better on. I think the biggest thing he's played it the way you'd want somebody who's got a running back like Jonathan Taylor to play it, in that he's not making the big game changing mistakes that kill things. I mean, I get it that the way sometimes he makes plays that you're like, oh, that looks terrible. But a lot of them have turned into incompletions or whatever. Like he's largely been able to avoid the really big, terrible, horrible plays. But they could use a little more out of it, and it doesn't have to be huge. Like they want the big chunk plays back in the passing game, but also maybe like earlier this season, Jonathan Taylor was a big part of the passing game. He's got one catch in the last four games, and only four targets. You know, I think Nyheim Hines is kind of more his. Production is a little bit more consistent with the rest of the season, but the problem is, I think the larger story with Hines is that he's got 25 catches less than he had last season. You know, getting the ball to those guys a couple more times a game maybe helps. You know, they've just got to figure out a way to make the passing game have a little more teeth in it. To take advantage of some of these teams that they're going to stack the box against Jonathan Taylor. It doesn't matter if Carson Wentz throws for 400 yards against the Jaguars, 400 yards in the wild card round, 400 yards in the divisional round, and they somehow make the AFC Championship. Whoever they play in the AFC Championship would still stack the box against Jonathan Taylor. but if they could start taking advantage of that, it'd be a big deal.
Well, when they say that they're built more for downfield passing than last year, I mean that is a statement on the quarterback and his physical abilities, right. But right. I don't see the rest of this offense built that way that much. I mean,
I agree with
Michael,
that.
You know, Michael Pittman, obviously he has an acrobatic ability to sometimes go up and get the ball, but like who else is the downfield player right now?
No, I agree.
And part of that is also, it's also that Wentz is more physically capable than Rivers, but also it's like, he also lacks some of what Rivers was good at, which is hitting those guys in space and the ball placement to let them catch it and run with it. I mean, it's not like they don't ever run some of these crossers and these plays that would get guys yards after catch. He's not throwing them, or he's not hitting them where he needs to hit them so that they can do that. I mean, Sunday really brought that out, where it just felt like the ball placement was all over the place. It was either too high. It was almost like it was like behind them. It was like, and sometimes he throws it to where they have to stop and like carry it into their chest. And these are like, are not, I mean, it's not, you could do that with Michael Pittman. He'll catch it and make a guy miss. There's not other athletes like that who can do this. Maybe Paris Campbell comes back. You know, he's the one guy that's like built for yak. And that's what he was at Ohio State, basically a running back in a slot receiver position. But counting on that at this point is not something I think you can do either. So it's just difficult. It's like, this is a part of Wentz's game that has ended up being his part of his doubt. Well, his real downfall in Philly, obviously, was turnovers and sacks, but it also was Doug Peterson was trying to get him to stop just trying to be a big play quarterback and do all these things, do these like hit these short timing routes and get guys the ball. And he just could never do it. And we're seeing that's still not all the way. That's still not fixed here. Like there still isn't an accurate, good ball placement type offense that can elevate players who are not superstar athletes. And I don't know. It's a weird thing because they've played. I think he can get better in this offense with years to come. But for this season, when they've played 16 games, it seems like kind of a hard thing to fix.
I agree. The interesting thing is that you can. This offense can function without a lot of yak. It actually can. And I was reminded of this when everyone was talking about yards after catch, just because it was a big storyline after the 18 season that, at least according to Pro Football Reference, Andrew Luck had just 4.6 yards after the catch per completion, which is really low. It's actually even lower than what Wentz has this year. But that was a very effective passing game, especially after the running game got going, in terms of yards per attempt. Now, Luck was far more accurate that season. That was Andrew's most accurate season by like 4% or something like that. But I think one of the things that's been missing in terms of just like the second receiver, like if you go back and look at that 18 team, they didn't have anybody really besides Hilton. Hilton was in the Pittman role. Other than they got 750 yards from Eric Ebron. And Ebron wasn't a yards after the catch guy. You know, he was a downfield, throw it up to him, that kind of big play type of guy in that season. They kind of tried to do that with Mo Alie-Cox this year, and it just never materialized.
We've seen with Mo Alie. I do think that's their idea with Mo Alie, but it's just like he, as we pointed out, he has a hard time like finishing the route and like getting into that spot where he's catching it on the run. It's almost like, I mean, he moves fast in the open field, like when the ball is not thrown yet, but then the second it comes out, trying to like catch up to that and catch it and tuck it and run with it. He did a little bit better with that on Sunday, I thought, but that's a guy that they're throwing him the ball. He's got 16 targets in the past 7 games, which is almost as much as Jack Doyle and Nyheim Hines, but he's got 8 catches for 84 yards in those 16 plays. So,
yeah,
we're trying.
So I think there's, you know, it's the temptation is always with this stuff to make it one or the other, but I think it's both. It's both. Wentz, if they're going to play this style of offense, Wentz has to be more accurate and more consistent. That's just true. They also need somebody in the receiving core to step up a little bit. Whether or not that's an off-season thing or an in-season thing, they've just got to be better. They've got to figure out some stuff.
One thing I've been noticing is like we think like with the new quarterback and new passing game that the longer they work together, it's going to get better, right? There's some reasoning for that, and it did after the first 3 weeks. Like, you know, you get your timing down, you start to learn how to play together, but there's also an effect that can happen where like it can get worse if like the players aren't that good in the end of the day. Like the league kind of catches up to them once they learn how your offense runs, And I think some of that's been happening. They had a really nice groove there from weeks, whatever it was, 4 through 9. But it's like at some point, you know, Mo Alley Cox, Zach Pascal, you know, T.Y. Hilton, guys like that have to win. And if they're not winning, like, you can run the plays and you can have good timing, but defenses are going to key in on it a little bit better than they were. And that to me feels like a lot of what's happening with Zach Pascal right now, where he played pretty well for the first month or two of the season. But right now, Zach Pascal is the number two receiver on this team for the season. And in the past 7 games, he has 7 catches for 58 yards on 17 targets at 3.4 yards per attempt. Like, it has really bottomed out. And it doesn't seem like that's something where the chemistry is getting worse. And to my knowledge, outside of, you know, he missed a week for COVID, it's not like it doesn't seem injury related. It's just like defenses caught up to the type of routes you want to run with that guy, and it's not working.
I think that's another example of, you don't, like, you can definitely blame the quarterback, because Wentz has never been a good yards after the catch guy. And that, you know, Marcus Brady said that's part of a stylistic thing with the quarterbacks. He also throws the ball. Zach Hicks from who works for SI did a good point on this, that Wentz likes to throw the ball outside the numbers. He likes to throw the ball to the sideline, where it's harder to get yards after the catch than it is up the middle. That was a good point too. But with Pascal specifically, I think it's important to note that he's been a different receiver this year. He's struggled, especially after the first 5 or 6 games. He has not looked like the same receiver he was last year, and some of the numbers bear that out. He's got twice as many drops this year as he did last year. And I think that anybody who, you know, the Tampa game sticks out. There's been a lot of times that Pascal just hasn't made the plays that he made previously. And it hasn't always been Wentz. You know, some of it is very clearly Zach Pascal has just not made some of the plays. T.Y. Hilton hasn't played a lot. You know, he hasn't played a lot this season. He's only played, I'm getting my chart up now. T.Y. has not played 300 snaps yet. He's played 28.2% of the snaps for the season, which is, you know, last year he played 64% of the snaps. Now, Pittman's emergence obviously makes up for that a little bit, but just in terms of how much T.Y.'s on the field, it just hasn't been very much. It's a boat.
T.Y.'s one of the most efficient players on this team right now, though. I mean, the numbers are because he caught a 45-yard touchdown. That wasn't like a play they run for him. I mean, that was luck. But even still, I mean, since the past 7 games, he's at 8.5 yards per target, and he has 3 touchdowns, and everyone else combines for 5. Michael Pittman doesn't have any. And so, I don't know, T.Y. is like the one guy that I think he can work through some of what's going, like, when we talk about defenses catching up to the routes you're running and how to defend them, T.Y. is still savvy enough to work through some of that. And these other guys don't seem like it's happening for them. And then I've been poking around on this and asking a lot of different guys. And as we know on this team, they do not like to, you know, get specific with struggling players. But what Frank Reich and Marcus Brady and Carson Wentz have all said is that they've turned run heavy over the past couple months, and it's taken them out of their rhythm. And so it's like, at first when they said run heavy, it sounded like an excuse. But then when you really, like, actually look at how this is playing out, that is what's going on. So on Sunday, Carson completed 7 straight passes in a 2-minute drill. So it's like it worked there, and nothing else worked like that the rest of the game. But nothing else was in any kind of rhythm. I mean, they scored a lucky 45-yard touchdown to T.Y. Hilton that should have been a pick. Outside of that, I mean, it was just an absolutely abysmal game. And I think that's kind of what's happening. It's like you're in the process of playing through Jonathan Taylor, who's so amazing, who's still running well against stack boxes. And yet, like, it almost like lulls everyone else to sleep. And these other guys need so much work to win this way. Carson and the receivers, against defenses that kind of know what they're doing. And it kind of feels like T.Y. is the one guy who's working through that to the best of his abilities, which are diminished. Because if you look at the numbers, Michael Pittman's not really doing it either.
Yeah, T.Y. has had – I think T.Y. has been a sneaky, like, unsung hero here down the stretch. Just in terms of, like, it feels like every time he makes a catch, it's a big one. He's not dominant the way he was in, like, 2018 or the years before that. But, he, like, the Arizona game, every time he made a catch, it was in a key spot, key, you know, that kind of key place. And it feels like he's kind of a – it's hard to call T.Y. Hilton a secret weapon, but on this team he almost is, the way it's been playing out the last, you know, month or so.
Yeah, well, it's like right now it's so hard for Carson to work with these receivers and win on routes. And so it's like someone's got to be savvy enough to play above that, and that's T.Y. It's like he's like the opposite of Mo Alley Cox at this point. Like Mo Alley is all the athletic abilities, but at the end of the day, if you can't finish your route and run it in a way that's going to get you a shred of separation, then you know, that's where we are. But the Pittman thing is interesting to me because if you look at how his season has gone, he's over 1,000 yards. It's the first Colts receiver other than T.Y. to do that since 2012. It's a really good year overall. But past seven games, it has really kind of fallen up. It's fallen down for him on every level on – so zero touchdowns, and I know he's been tackled inside the five, but it's not been efficient either. He's at just over 7 yards per attempt, and his yards per catch have not been explosive either. He's at like 11, which is less than T.Y. So I just think that's a league catching up to him a little bit. He's just one guy who can't do everything, you know, and it's that with the struggles of a quarterback, and that's where you are.
Early in the first half of the season, he had a ton of explosive. It was consistent, you know. There are a lot of 50-50 balls, jump balls. They haven't – have they thrown one to him since the Tampa Bay interception?
Down the field, I don't think so.
I don't want to read too much into that because I don't know. But it probably has more to do with rolling coverages and stuff like that. But you'd hope that just that play isn't what made them go away from it. You know, but that's the last time I can remember them going deep. So if they're going to make any noise in the playoffs, they're going to have to do that because they're probably going to run into. I mean, think about the teams that they're going up against. That they're the two teams they're most likely to play in the playoffs, assuming they win, are Buffalo and Cincinnati. And Cincinnati is going to score points. You assume Buffalo is not going to play the same. They're not going to struggle the same way on offense that they did the first time. Now, maybe the defense can do that, but it's you know, that's the offense you expect to score points. And so when those lulls happen, they're going to have to get plays from the passing game in the playoffs to play with those teams. Because I think as good as the Colts corners have played this year, you know, if they go to Cincinnati and they're going up against Burrow and those three receivers, like, they're going to give up some stuff. They just are. It's a really good passing offense.
Yeah, and if you look at them in this seven-game stretch, they had the game at Buffalo, which was, you know, it was wind and rain, and you can give the passing game a pass for that, and they didn't need to do it with Jonathan Taylor. That's the only weather game, though, they've had. The other road games have been at Houston, at Arizona, and now they're going at Jacksonville. But in the playoffs, they're going to go to either, like you said, Cincinnati or Buffalo. You win that, you might end up in Kansas City or New England. Like, the conditions are going to get harder these guys. Now, I will say Carson is built to be a cold weather quarterback, and sometimes I almost wonder if I don't want to say he's better in those settings, but he seems to play more within himself. Like, he really extends plays and seems to use his legs a little bit more than his arm. I've noticed that in Buffalo, at least, and you know, he grew up in that. But like, it's not going to get easier on these receivers who, I mean, if they're having a hard time, you know, winning on routes and catching the ball and doing all that on, you know, in a dome, then tests are just going to come. And I think this offensive staff's done a nice job this year, especially Greg Doyle had a nice piece today about how they've kind of learned this season as they've gone, and they understood what it's like to build an offense around an elite running back like Jonathan Taylor and really lean into him. But I just wonder what the fixes are at this point, unless maybe Paris Campbell comes back and all of a sudden is healthy and it looks like a second round player. That just seems like a lot to ask for in like a couple weeks.
Yeah, ultimately, we'll get more into this later, but, you know, whether it's the receivers or whether there's whatever they've got to work with, Wentz just has to get more. They have to get more out of Wentz. They have to get more out of Wentz. They have to get more out of the passing game.
Yeah, the last thing I want to say on this is that all fans that we've heard all year, but I've been hearing a lot lately, is how predictable the play calling is. Well, is it? What I have to ask is the play calling predictable or is the personnel predictable? If you look at the stats for this season, and it is all Jonathan Taylor and Michael Pittman, and so maybe they should draw up more plays to other guys. Would you, though? Or are you going to try and win through those two? It's just an interesting conversation point because I went through this in Detroit where everyone said that they were too predictable, but they had the worst run game personnel I've ever seen. And I was like, why would you run it when you've got Matthew Stafford, Marvin Jones, Golden Tate, Eric Ebron? Like, at some point, sometimes your team's built predictably. And I just wonder, looking back, if as well as they built this with Jonathan Taylor and this offensive line, you know, did they do enough at receiver to make their coaches, put their coaches in a spot to not look predictable?
I think also that the predictable thing, like, you can't, I do think they've gotten much, much more run pass. Reich is forcing it on first down and second down more than he typically would because he's trying to feed Taylor. But in terms of like what plays they're running, how they're attacking teams, I'm just going to say, I doubt people have the charts of everything they've run over the last couple of weeks to know for sure that they're just running the exact same plays over and over again.
No, that's what I'm saying. I don't think the plays are predictable. I think how they go about getting their yards is predictable. Here's a stat I'll give you. I was looking at the receivers ranked in the top 120 in the NFL right now. The Colts have one of those, which is Michael Pittman. He's like 17th. There's only one other team that only has one, and that's the Houston Texans. But some of these teams, like the Raiders they just faced, have six. The Rams have six. Like, some of the guys on the list are like this is how easy it is to be in the top 120. That includes like Henry Ruggs, who hasn't played since October. It includes two guys the Patriots signed out of free agency and just plugged in this year, Kendrick Bourne and Hunter Henry. It includes a rookie running back like Najee Harris. It includes DeSean Jackson, Dan Arnold, who have switched teams in the middle of the year. Like, all these other teams in a passing league are finding production outside of their stars, and this team's not. So maybe you think that's because they're too predictable in how they're calling it. But I look at certain plays, like when they draw up a slant route for Mo Alie-Cox in the end zone against a corner who's 5 inches shorter and it bounces off his hands. You know, at some point, is this team built enough to, you know, are the players good enough? It's an interesting question because I think there's some things the coaches could do better too. But for the most part, I think other teams, when they're scouting this Colts team, they say, who are the guys that scare you? It's Michael Pittman, it's Jonathan Taylor, and not a whole lot else.
Yeah. If anybody else beats us, we're fine with it.
Yep. And that happened in the Arizona game, right? I mean, T.Y. Hilton made some great plays and Carson made a great throw to Desmond Patman. Like, you tip your hat that game, but that's happened once in pretty much since I came on the beat.
We'll see what happens. Obviously, big game in Jacksonville. I think most Colts fans, though, are more concerned with what happens in the playoffs. We'll have to see where they go. For the Colts Cover 2 podcast, I am Joel A. Erickson, and that's Nate Atkins. Be on the lookout for Nate's story. He's really been diving deep into the receivers and the production, and it's going to be something good. And I'm going to have something on Quentin Nelson, too. So we'll have some stuff here heading into the weekend for you guys to read. The Colts Cover 2 podcast, we will talk to you after the Jacksonville game, win or lose.